Welcome to this podcast. I'm Stuart McCullough. I'm the CEO of VHAA, and joining me today is the Director of Workplace Relations Services, Tim Nagel. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
Tim, we've got a bit to get through today, so no messing about. We'll jump straight into the topic for today's discussion.
Yeah, so today we're talking about a significant decision coming from the Fair Work Commission with respect to aged care. It's a landmark decision concerning the setting of rates and gender equity. And given the level of member interest, we wanted to draw attention to it ahead of all the final details being sorted out.
So by way of background, the Commission handed down the third stage of its aged care decision on the 15th of March, 2024.
Is that case completely concluded now?
So the thing is that there are still some matters that are being resolved, including any proposal around operative dates and phasing in. And there are also some issues with respect to the approach to nurses.
And first of all, what is the basis of the aged care case?
So this is really interesting. The case is really a result of new powers that the Commission has under the Fair Work Act with respect to work value.
And how have those powers changed?
So previously, for a work value case to be successful, what it required was for the applicant to demonstrate that the value of the work had changed over time.
And what's different now?
So there's a new approach which is underpinned by Section 157 of the Fair Work Act. So whereas once work value cases were underpinned by the need to demonstrate that change in work value, what's new is that the Act permits consideration of whether there's been any historical undervaluation on the basis of gender. That's now a relevant consideration.
So we should take a look at those provisions.
So the first thing to note is that Section 157 of the Act empowers the Commission to vary modern awards in order to meet modern award objectives.
And subclause 2 provides, as you can see on screen.
Yes, it talks about the Commission making that it may make a determination to vary a modern award if they're satisfied that the variation is justified by work value reasons, and the making of the determination outside the system of annual wage reviews is necessary to achieve the modern awards objective. Tim, we know that the modern awards are varied each year on the 1st of July, but what this provides is that there can be adjustments outside that annual cycle. And I need to emphasise that is not new.
But the Act now also details work value reasons at subclause 2A and 2B.
Yeah, really critical provisions of the Act, and we're going to bring them up on screen. So 2A talks about work value reasons or reasons justifying the amount that employees should be paid for doing a particular kind of work, being reasons related to any of the following: the nature of the work, level of skill or responsibility involved in doing the work, the conditions under which the work is done. So far, so traditional. But 2B, the Fair Work Commission's consideration of work value reasons must, that's a must, not a may, be free of assumptions based on gender and include consideration of whether historically the work has been undervalued because of assumptions based on gender.
The phrases that stand out there are 2B, the Commission's consideration must be free of assumptions based on gender and include consideration of whether historically their work has been undervalued because of assumptions based on gender.
Yes, and put another way, what the Act contemplates is considering not simply whether a rate is right based on the current value of the work, but in effect, whether the rate has ever been right.
And that really sets the scene for the aged care decision.
Yeah, and the first thing to note is that the aged care decision concerns 3 applications to vary modern awards, and those applications seek to increase the rates for aged care sector workers.
And which awards are the subject of those applications?
So unsurprisingly, the Aged Care Award, but also the Nurses Award and the Social Community Home Care Disability Services Industry Award, better known as the SHADS Award.
And the decision is a full bench of the Commission.
So it's not quite. It's a little bit different. It has 3 commission members, including the president, as well as 2 experts, and they're referred to as the expert panel.
And what did the expert panel find?
So essentially that the work of aged care employees has been the subject of an historical undervaluation on the basis of gender.
And what approach did it take to get to that conclusion?
So the short answer is a very detailed one. What the stage three decision does is consider the history of wage fixation in awards over about 100 years.
So what's really a finding that gender assumptions have affected the process of wage fixation?
That's right. So the expert panel finds that the initial wage fixing model was affected by gender assumptions from the outset, really reflecting the times in which those decisions were made.
And the decision also includes examples.
There are multiple examples that we could take you to, but we'll just pick out a couple. So one of the ones that, and we'll go to it because it's a benchmark decision, Justice Higgins' decision in the landmark medals decision of 1921. And there's an extract of text on screen. This court assumes that a skilled man should, as has been the uniform practice, get more for his skill or other necessary exceptional qualifications than a mere labourer, more or better commodities, and to that end, more money wages. This court takes the basic wage for the labourer and then adds to it an extra wage without which, under present conditions, lads will not take the trouble of mastering the difficulties of a skilled trade.
Which is gender specific. Is that the only example?
It really isn't. The expert panel also extracts another decision of Justice Higgins in the fruit pickers decision, which concerned not just fruit pickers, but also fruit packers. Fruit pickers were predominantly male and the fruit packers were predominantly female, and both had to be considered together. And the expert panel extracted the following from that decision. Now, in fixing the minimum wage for a man, I have been forced to fix it by considerations other than those of mere earning power. I have assessed it in the first instance so far as regards the living or basic wage on the normal needs of the average employee regarded as the human being living in a civilized community.
And to give that context, this is extracted from a part of the decision headed discrimination on the basis of sex.
That's right. The decision went on. If he has a wife and children, he's under an obligation to maintain them. How is such a minimum applicable in the case of a woman picker? She is not, unless perhaps in very exceptional circumstances, under any such obligation. The minimum cannot be based on exceptional cases. So here you have a decision where gender issues are being considered, and the outcome turns out to be directly discriminatory. Ultimately, the rate for a female fruit packer was set at 75% of the rate of the predominantly male fruit picker rate.
And to give that context, it's not something confined to 100 years ago.
Not at all. Later, a decision of a full bench of the Australian Conciliation and Arbitration Commission in 1967 noted that in that industry, there were classifications with the same name that were prescribed different margins for women. The decision goes on to recount the equal pay cases from the late 60s and early 70s, in which submissions noted that wages had been set with different assumptions in mind on the basis of gender, and specifically that the wage for the male had to be a quote-unquote family wage.
It should be noted that the decision also noted instances where someone argued for equal wages, but not for reasons that you might consider.
I think it's called having a bit both ways. There is an example given of an argument for equal wages on the basis of gender to prevent, and I need to emphasise, this is a quote, unfair competition with men.
The reason for highlighting these examples is really to draw attention to how deeply the expert panel has considered these issues.
And if I could summarise it all in one sentence, the essential finding is that the system was infected by gender bias that was never addressed, resulting in historical undervaluation of female-dominated industries such as aged care. And for those who are interested in the issue of gender and wage fixing, we do highly recommend the third stage of the aged care matter from paragraph 25. It's an incredibly in-depth and compelling analysis of that issue.
How does a finding of undervaluation actually work? What's the comparator?
So the comparator comes from a male-dominated sector under something known as the C10 Medals Framework.
So there is a clear comparator and framework. How does the Commission address that?
So it does that by setting a benchmark rate of a key classification.
And so that, in effect, becomes where the rate is heading.
Yeah, and by and in reaching that benchmark rate, there's a need to ensure that it's justified by work value reasons, and the rate must be free of assumptions based on gender. That's a point the Commission continually makes.
There's an obvious question here in that the case is specific to those in aged care.
Yeah, it is. And it should be noted that earlier decisions had awarded a 15% interim increase for aged care employees.
And what does that mean for aged care employees now?
Well, in the case of nurses, it means that the award has two sets of rates for the same classification, one for those working in aged care and one for working somewhere else.
So that'd be quite unusual.
It is, but it's not the end of the story. The stage three decision refers back to stage one, and part of that decision as follows. The analysis in paragraphs 942 to 955 of the stage one decision and paragraphs 111 to 113 of this decision would indicate that the work of all RNs and ENs covered by the Nurses Award, not just those employed in the aged care sector, had been subject of a failure to properly apply the C10 medal alignment framework and gender undervaluation.
Well, that makes sense. And it leads to there being another application to vary the Nurses Award for all nurses, whether in aged care or elsewhere.
There is. And given those observations as part of the aged care decision, I think that application is no surprise.
And what's the objective of that additional application?
So in a nutshell, what it's intended to do is result in a single rate for each classification rather than an aged care and a non-aged care rate.
So while stage three was the last of three stages, there are still some things to work out.
Yeah, there are. There are submissions regarding the date of operative effect and potential phasing in, with the Commonwealth submitting that this should occur in two steps from the 1st of January 2025 and the 1st of January 2026.
So it should be noted that there are submissions also that are contrary to that approach, so seeking an earlier date without phasing. So how will it be resolved given the conflicting positions?
We've made reference to two sets of a couple of lots of competing submissions. The Commission will make a determination on those issues.
So to summarise, the aged care decision concerns changes to work values and includes consideration of whether the rates are free of gender assumptions.
And a finding that certain rates were not properly set.
Using the C10 medals framework applying to a male-dominated sector, some of the employees are then subject to a benchmark rate to which the award will then move to.
Yes, and the reason we're saying some employees is that there are some are subject to that C10 medals framework, some are subject to different considerations, but that in the case of nurses, there is that additional application to apply these principles to all nurses, rather than just those in aged care, and that application is currently in progress.
So we did describe this as a landmark decision, and there's still a little more to play out, though.
There is, but we'll keep members informed as that proceeds.
And where can members find more information on this subject?
There is no shortage of information, Tim. The Commission has a major cases page, and there's a lot of detail, including submissions, correspondences, directions, transcripts, and summaries.
So thanks for providing that summary today, Stuart. It's very interesting and is a very interesting case. So I think we've recommended that people have a look at it, and they really should for the background.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. I'm